Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly to discuss the personal politics of health. Is there now enough evidence to be concerned about exposure to electromagnetic fields from power lines, appliances, cell phones, and wireless devices? Researchers who are studying their health effects are concerned, but the proliferation continues. It's impossible now to go to a library without being exposed. Cities are being blanketed in wireless, even state parks. This so people can open a laptop anywhere and get onto the internet. Progressives are glad because now poor people can get access to the internet without paying. But how many of them have computers? The missed point is that people are being exposed to something that the scientific community isn't sure is safe, and they're being exposed whether they want to or not. In fact, there are communities fighting against this technology, and because of the Telecommunications Act, they can't object on the basis of health effects. What country is this? Secondhand smoke has been established as a Class 2 carcinogen that you have a right to protect yourself from, but you can't go to a library or a state park without being exposed to a technology that's been proven to cause TNA breaks and brain tumors. No, wait, you can't go home without being exposed to a new technology that's been proven to cause DNA breaks and brain tumors. Join us today for a new piece of groundbreaking news about electronic organizers and how they're contributing to the soup of radiation. Our guest is environmental consultant Cindy Sage. First, an editorial about this week's news by Jeff Fawcett, Ph.D.
Thank you, Lena. Food manufacturers spend $10 billion each year for advertising that targets children. Targets. Our children are targets. Of course, you and I are targets too, but that's another story. A lot of that money shows up in TV advertising. Last week, the Kaiser Family Foundation released a report on how much children are exposed to food advertising on television. This is an easy punching bag to take a swipe at, so I won't linger. Just a few statistics from the report. Overall advertising that targets children, for children 2 to 7, 14,000 ads per year, totaling 106 hours. That's almost 4.5 days. For children 8 to 12, 30,000 ads per year, totaling 230 hours, almost 10 days. And for children 13 to 17, 29,000 ads per year for 217 hours, 9 days. That's advertising for everything. For just food advertising that targets children, children 2 to 7, 4,400 ads per year for 30 hours, children 8 to 12, 7,600 ads per year for 50 hours, and children 13 to 17, 6,000 ads per year for 40 hours. The bulk of foods advertised are candy, processed foods, cereal, and sugar-fortified drinks. No ads for fruits or vegetables. None. The article in the San Francisco Chronicle that covered the release of the Kaiser Report opened with the story of a mother who wondered why her 7-year-old son, who had been an avid fruit and vegetable guy, started asking for junk food. She spent a half hour with him watching his favorite TV program. Quite a surprise. She'd have another rude surprise if she followed him to his favorite websites. Last July, Kaiser published another report on the new frontier of advertising that targets children, advergaming. As the game suggests, it is a blending of advertising and video games presented on the internet. Advergaming and the other methods being developed by those clever people in the marketing departments of our leading corporations employ all the slick methods of the internet, methods like viral marketing. That's when a kid is asked to email a friend about her or his favorite advergaming site. The virtue of this new frontier, expected to quadruple over the next 5 years, is that it's cheap compared to TV advertising, and it doesn't have even the fangless FCC to oversee it. The industry, of course, has promised to behave itself and so on. Some people have to pretend that they believe it. I don't. You shouldn't. Last year, the Institute of Medicine issued a report on the topic of advertising that targets children. Their recommendations, adopted by respectable organizations, consist of directing food manufacturers to use their creative talents to promote healthful diets for children, working with industry to develop a better code of conduct, and encouraging research to determine just how much marketing actually affects children. Good grief. I have two ideas to add. Kids are pretty smart. I think they can learn to be media savvy so they know when they're being played for a chump. On the industry side, let's make them contribute to a fund, $2 for every $1 they spend targeting children. The fund would be used specifically to make kids media savvy and to counter industry advertising with alternative content. I'd avoid the healthy diet issue, since that means the USDA food pyramid, which is heavily influenced by the food industry and, as one critic commented, is quite similar to the USDA's diet for fattening livestock. But I digress. The impetus for the two Kaiser reports and the Institute of Medicine report is the growing concern that children are too fat, the obesity epidemic among kids caused by junk food. It's a nice, neat causal chain. Advertising leads to bad eating habits, leads to obesity. I think that view is wrong. As with adults, the increase in the number of fat kids is a symptom of something more profound. And the eating problem behind it is not that kids are eating too many calories. The problem is that kids are malnourished, which doesn't mean too few calories. It means they're not getting the nutrients they need to thrive. Food advertising that targets children isn't just making kids fat. It's ruining their health because the foods are empty calories. Malnutrition. Children are starving. For a copy of this editorial, go to our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, and go to the blog. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Dr. Fawcett. Jeff Fawcett, PhD, is an environmental economist, writer, and health educator who works with individuals. He co-produces this radio show and is editor of the Progressive Health Observer, a news commentary alternative to Big Box Medicine. You can reach him by going to our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, or you can call him directly at 707-874-1496. And now to our topic today, high EMF risk from personal organizers, and our guest, Cindy Sage, who has been involved in EMF issues as an environmental consultant and public policy researcher since 1982. She's provided professional consulting services to cities, counties, various states, and a national EMF policy group on the issue of EMF policy and prudent avoidance. EMF is electromagnetic fields. She has published numerous technical papers and peer-reviewed journals on EMF radiation. Ms. Sage has also submitted testimony before many public commissions on the topic and has been a presenter at meetings of professional societies. She's served on public commissions such as the California Public Utilities Commission EMF Consensus Group. She's a reviewer for the journals Bioelectromagnetics and the Journal of Risk Analysis. Cindy Sage is a founder and principal of Sage Associates, an environmental consulting firm, and we're so happy to have you back with this interesting new news.
Hi, Lena. It's great to be back.
Thank you. So we've got exposures and we've got emissions. For clarity, let's distinguish them, as in electromagnetic field represents the major category. What are the subsets?
Right. Well, you know, we've talked about electromagnetic fields on this program in the past, and they're primarily of two types that, you know, people in the public are going to run into. One type is ELF, or extra low frequency fields, and that's the subset of EMF that defines or describes electricity, electromagnetic fields, fields from power lines and appliances and so on. So that's part of the division of EMF. And the second is radio frequency fields. Those are at higher frequencies, and they tend to come from sources like your cell phones, radio, television, broadcast, and all of the wireless transmissions. So, you know, the beginning of this conversation really is, you know, EMF comes in two parts that we're going to talk about, extra low frequency and radio frequency.
And what do we know about the addition of increasingly more layers? I mean, we started out with FM, and I remember when I interviewed Yoli Johansson from the Karolinska Institute. Dr. Johansson talked about the fact that they did a research project that showed that when FM was introduced into the country, the incidence of cancers went up. And now what we're seeing is each new layer coming in as we add more devices and more appliances, and now we're adding this radio frequency. What do we know about the addition of more layers?
Well, you're right. You know, a good way to characterize it is to say that, we're really swimming in a soup of electrosmog or electromagnetic fields. In the good old days, it was only AM, FM, and television. And yes, there are studies that, correlate that to increased risk of cancers and other neurological problems. But today, with this just massive and unprecedented rollout of wireless technologies, we can see, you know, additional layering that we're exposed to now in almost all areas of the globe. If you look back 30 years, the average exposure level in a town was about 0.003 microwatts per centimeter squared. Just remember the number. And today it's up to about a tenth, or almost 100 times more.
That's a lot more.
We're looking at a situation where not only are we getting it from sources that are outside of our homes and businesses, meaning, you know, those antennas that are on a far hill, you know, for broadcast purposes, but we're actually bringing these sources into our homes with personal wireless devices. And I think many people just do not realize yet that these are bioactive exposures, meaning they interact with the body and its processes, and there are consequences to choosing.
You might also explain, people often think that when they add a wireless router in their house so that they can hook up to the Internet, that this, they always think of this, well, this is very low frequency, so that's okay. But in fact, some of the low frequency exposures, especially the ones that are constant, are causing a lot of problems.
Yeah, Lena, I think you mean low intensity, and, that's just that's the strength of these fields.
Oops.
And you're right. You know, these little wireless routers that you buy at the local office store and bring in so you can have portability with your computer and hook up to the Internet from any room in your house are creating a blanket of low intensity or low strength radio frequency. And levels that are just exquisitely low, like they produce, have already been associated in some studies and reported in some studies to cause people to feel unwell. And they interrupt sleep, importantly. So, you know, there's a big downside here to uninformed deployment of these technologies. And, you know, we have so many anecdotal reports now, as well as the scientific studies, telling us that people will bring a wireless router home and install it, and pretty soon one or two members of the family are having symptoms that they didn't have before. They might be related to lack of sleep. They might be related to headaches or feelings of fatigue or lack of concentration, that kind of thing. And if you shut these devices off, those symptoms disappear. And if you hear that, you hear this enough, you begin to think that there's really something to it. It's not psychological. It has a physiological basis. If you look to the studies that we already have, and there are hundreds of studies, most of them, however, at higher field strengths, what we know already is that there's an increased risk showing up for brain tumors and acoustic neuromas with cell phone use, although I probably wouldn't characterize it as you did as proof yet, but I think we're getting closer and closer, and certainly the warning is there. There's certainly enough evidence to indicate that chronic use of a cell phone will also increase your risk of acoustic neuroma, which is another kind of like a brain cancer, but it's of the auditory nerve in the ear. And a whole host of other health problems that are actually well documented now. So when we talk about this subject with people who call us and with our clients, the first thing we say is, look, you know, we're here to provide information for you to help you make a better decision, and you need to be informed before you do that. Informed consent is absolutely lacking today. The public is not getting good information, or really any information, about these emissions from devices and the kinds of exposures that they could expect.
You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and I'm on the phone with Cindy Sage of Sage Associates. And I neglected to write down your email, your website, which is it silicon?
Our website is www.sageassociates.net.
Not hard.
Sageassociates.net.
Okay. Now, you were very thankful that you did this. You chose this show to break some news on a very new piece of research, and this is about it's PDA, personal something.
Digital assistance.
Personal. That's how acquainted I am with these products. So for the few other Luddites in the audience who I know vaguely what they are, I know the brands are like a BlackBerry, and there's some other brands. Trio is another one or something.
Yeah, that's right. Those are the most common. Yeah, nobody calls them PDAs anymore or personal digital assistants, but that's the overarching name for them, and there are various brands, as you've said. We did a little piece of research here at Sage Associates about a year and a half ago. We had someone visiting, and we put a meter up close to the device he was using, and were completely astonished at the very, very high ELF, or extra low frequency, emissions that were coming off this little device. Now, just to make it really simple here, you know, this is something that the battery produces. It's sort of not a shockwave, but it's a spike of energy, extra low frequency energy coming out of that battery that keeps it running. And it's in addition, it's on top of, additive to the radio frequency that we all know these devices use. I mean, this is like a souped up cell phone, a PDA, you know, for those people in your audience who may not know what a PDA is, it's one of those electronic organizers, sometimes called a handheld computer, and you can receive and send email as well as use the thing as a phone. You can get stock updates, you can play games, and so on. So it's a cell phone that's got a whole lot of other functions, and some of them are very cool. You know, people use these things a lot, particularly in business. But in addition to the radio frequency that you get, you also are getting ELF emissions. So we looked at that and said, this is a very good little project to run because, you know, what do we already know about ELF? Well, not very long ago, some federal agencies in this country and the World Health Organization classified ELF as a Category 2B carcinogen. And that's a very powerful classification. It means possible carcinogen, but there's a lot of evidence there that it's associated with increased risk of cancer, Alzheimer's, ALS, and miscarriage, among others. So I'd be glad to tell you what we found, and maybe more importantly, for people excuse me, who want to continue using these devices, or they're required to in their work, maybe there are some things we can talk about that would lessen the harm that they may be doing.
But let's go over what you did and exactly what you found.
Yeah. Well, we put recording computers, meters, on a number of BlackBerries and Trios that were provided to us by a group up in Santa Clara, a high-powered company that does commercial brokerage. And we had realtors and brokers who were on these things all day long. And they agreed to have a group of them let us record their emissions. So we did this over a period of time and then downloaded and printed out the data for each of the units. And what we found was that we were seeing emissions that were several hundred milligauss, almost up to 1,000 milligauss. Now, your listeners probably need some comparisons here.
Please.
But what does that compare to?
Well, we know that an ordinary cordless phone in the house is maybe up to 4.5 milligauss.
Well, remember, we're not going to talk about we're talking about just the ELF component here.
Oh, okay. See, I get confused too.
Yeah, so we'll leave that analogy aside.
Okay.
The right analogy would be what kind of electromagnetic fields, ELF, EMF fields, would you have in your house that you would be exposed to? The average
well, for instance,
is under one.
Yeah, milligauss. But there's like also the highest thing in the house is usually the refrigerator, which is 10.
Yeah, it's 10, right. The average house is about half a milligauss. The average office is between 1 and 2 milligauss. Most of the occupational studies of cancer that look at time-weighted averaging don't have categories over 4 milligauss because so few people are exposed to those levels. Now, The only analogy we could come up with here to give people a feeling for, you know, how high is 100 milligauss or 900 milligauss. The only way we could explain that you might ever run into that in daily life would be to go hold your head against the wall where you have an electric subpanel cranking away electricity for your entire home. And that's really it's really inadvisable.
Is it comparable to the types of levels that PG&E workers who climb poles are exposed to? Because those are the people who were studied and found to be getting more cancers.
It's much higher than that.
Higher than that.
Yeah. Okay. Now, think about this. I think the average PG&E worker in a study I read maybe a decade ago was about, time-weighted average of 13 or 16 milligauss.
That's less.
Yeah,
less
what we're seeing here is that some of these... Now, the next thing we need to do to help people understand why this is a big deal is to say, how do people use these devices, these PDAs? Well, they wear them. Okay, they wear them next to their skin on their body or with a shirt or blouse in between, or they put them in a pocket. So they're basically directly against your body, and they're there all day long. Or you take them out and you send an email, or you check your email, and that is so close to your body that essentially the emission from the device is your exposure. You're getting everything it's putting out, right?
Yes.
So you know, the first thing that you know that I would stress here is that we already know that we have a number of diseases that have, you know, that are related to, highly associated with exposure to electromagnetic fields of this type. So the first thing you would want to do then for prevention is to get these things away from your body.
Let's talk about prevention after we talk about what we're actually People who are completely novices to this understand that potentially even carrying a cell phone is hazardous, because there have been studies that show that there are problems with having a cell phone attached to your waist if it's on all the time you're getting irradiated. But that's a different form of radiation.
Right, that's the radio frequency.
That's the radio frequency, okay. But right. But then I wonder whether, for instance, another comparison might be, well, no, again, this is a different form of radiation, I believe, but remember the studies with the highway patrolmen who had the laser guns?
They had radar. They were all
that's
getting testicular cancer or lymphomas.
Is that comparable, that they're sitting there with that thing in their lap?
It's a cousin. It isn't directly comparable. It's a cousin. They may be battery operated, and they may have had an ELF emission.
Okay, so maybe the most comparable thing is just the idea that people are doing the equivalent of having their head against their power source in their house all day long, or having it against their kidney or their liver, God forbid.
Right.
But the other thing I wonder about is, you know, this thing starts operating, and then you're getting an email or something, and then it's going to even produce more, because it's active, right? So there's going to be spikes while it's being used. But is it also emitting in a radius around that person, so that if somebody is working next to that person or in a bus next to that person, they're also getting irradiated?
You know, for the ELF portion that we measured, I don't think so, because these fields fall off quickly with distance, which is great, because it means if you hold it away from yourself, you know, from your body,
that's one of
these
the things
fields
that's
are going to drop almost to nothing.
So running away from people screaming at them and throwing things at them when they pull one of these out is not appropriate.
The right way to think about this and the message here is this. If you have a PDA and you use it a lot, you get a lot of emails, you send a lot of emails, you have a lot of data transmission, and that is producing the highest exposures, so the highest emissions, and they're very spiky. Every time an email comes in or goes out, you're getting a spike that can go from, you know, 100 to nearly 1,000. And looking at the way that a lot of our participants in this study use their PDAs, they were often on all day long. There wouldn't be a four-minute period where they didn't either send or receive one. They were on it all day long. And what that means is that even when they're, you know, you're walking, you know, down a hall in the office and you have this PDA on your belt, you may not be answering an email coming in, but it is being received. There's this big spike of extra low frequency energy coming out of that PDA as that function is accomplished. And you're basically taking that hit all day long, off on, off on, off on.
Isn't it also used as, is it, are they also used as a cell phone too?
And they are. And it's interesting, there's a much different profile that we see for the battery. The way the battery operates then is it doesn't have to work as hard for a voice transmission in comparison to a data transmission. And what happens is that you see an elevated magnetic field of 5 or 10 milligauss for the entire time that that cell phone is being used as, you know, for a voice transmission, and then it drops off. So it goes up, it'll stay up at 5 or 10 milligauss, and then go back down at the end of the call. Very unlike the pattern of ELF exposure, the spiky exposure, you see when emails are occurring or you're receiving a file like a photograph from a friend or a stock tip or some data is being transmitted to you. And so this is the time that we're seeing the higher emissions. And this is the time which we really believe you need to take some action to get it away from your body.
Okay, so tell us the prudent avoidance. I mean, you had said in your notes that there are employers who require employees to have one of these. So if
true.
Yeah, okay. So
true.
What can people do to protect themselves?
Well, there's a laundry list, and you know, I'll start down the list, and we can talk more about the ones you like. You know, leave it off when you're not actively using it for sending emails or picking up messages or calling someone. Turn it off. And you may have to set some limits with your employer on this. If you are expected to be on 24/7 every minute, that's a problem. But if you can check in once every half an hour or hour and hold it away from you and then turn it off again, you have tremendously lowered your exposure. Okay, so it's okay to have it close to you if it's off, but it's not okay to have it near your body when it's on. And a foot or two is enough. Okay, a foot or two is enough. So, you know, put it on your desk when you're working. If you're in the car, put it on the other seat in the car. Put it away from you, but don't wear it. And obviously, you know, use a landline for telephoning. Use your desktop or a laptop computer to check in when you get back to the office for non-essential messages. If you really expect a busy time on a big project or something at work, and you know you're going to have a lot of intensive communication to do, try to be at a place that you can take and make your calls from a landline. Don't use this as, you know, an intensive piece of technology when you're going to have to be on the phone for an hour or two or repetitively over a period of a day or two. And don't use it as a mindless pastime toy, because it is not a toy. You're getting a medicinal level, a pharmaceutical level of treatment, basically.
Explain what you mean by that.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've been working on some projects here, separate projects, but they're showing that electromagnetic fields are now widely used at very low strengths for all kinds of beneficial treatments or therapeutic treatments in medicine. And they're at levels that are far lower than the standards that these technologies operate at. For example, bone healing.
So what you're saying is they're bioactive. What you're saying is that low treatments have a bioactive effect that can be used in an acute situation, but that constant exposure over a long period of time is dangerous in the same way that you wouldn't take, like, a chemotherapy drug forever.
You wouldn't take any drug indiscriminately.
Yeah.
And this is what we're doing. We're indiscriminately exposing ourselves to forms of therapy that, you know, in a controlled situation are beneficial, and an uncontrolled situation or indiscriminately applied can be very dangerous. And we're beginning to see the effect of this now. I mean, you look at the brain tumor risks and the cancer risks, ALS and miscarriage risks. And you begin to see that this is just the flip side of the coin. But I think it's an excellent one to convince skeptical people. You get somebody who breaks a leg on the ski slope at Mammoth, and that fracture doesn't heal. The first thing that'll happen then is that you'll be getting a bone healing treatment with electromagnetic fields. And boy, does that work well. Same for wound healing. So
We should be clear that we're not saying that because it has beneficial effects at low frequencies in an acute situation. Just to be clear, that having it on all the time is going to have you have great bones.
I don't think so. No,
well,
I'm
I just
very,
want to be
lucky.
Clear with people, you know, because people do think that way. So, in fact, you have this laundry list. of, you know, miscarriage, fertility problems, DNA damage and breaks. We know about that. Chronic stress, stress proteins induced at low-level exposure.
Yeah.
So it's like being exposed to chronic stress all the time and all the nice things that happen to you when that's happening. And then you have memory and learning problems. And then you said there's over 30 studies that are connecting it to insomnia and depression and anxiety, which we're seeing a terrible increase of.
Yeah, when you think of the societal costs, even if this is just in part responsible, and I believe it is, you know, the societal costs are enormous. People work hard enough today, you know, and to carry a technology around that requires them to be on 24/7 and accountable, and then to have it silently be creating physiological stress, the induction of heat shock protein or stress proteins, is really proof. Mm-hmm. That these are bioactive and harmful if you do this long enough.
Yeah.
It's not just a little bit of use, but day in and day out.
Constant,
use.
Yeah.
And, you know, Lena, go ahead, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say we need to take a brief musical break. Can you hold that thought and come back to it when
sure.
you come back? Okay. So this is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman on the phone with Cindy Sage from Sage Associates. SageAssociates.net is her website. We're talking about electromagnetic fields, radio frequency fields, low frequency electric fields, and their dangers, especially as of a new research project on personal assistance that people carry, BlackBerries and Tiros and things like that. We're going to take a brief musical break. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
No more lying friends. Wanting tragic ends, though they do pretend, they won't go when I go. All the bleeding hearts with sorrows to impart, we're right here from the start, and they.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman. I'm on the phone today with Cindy Sage of Sage Associates. Her website again, sageassociates.net, S-A-G-E, Sage Associates. If you missed parts of today's show, and you can go to our website all week and listen to it at yourownhealthandfitness.org, where you'll also find information on the Progressive Health Observer and Radio on Demand, where you can download archives and articles. You can also call us at 707-874-2772 or directly to Jeff Fawcett, Ph.D. at 874-1496, again in the 707. I broke your concentrations. We've been talking about the personal, I can never get this right, something
PDA
assistance.
PDA.
The I so don't use these. It's hard for me. It's like a little wireless computer, basically, and cell phone attached.
Well, it's your friendly CrackBerry, you know, and we've talked about a lot of the effects of these devices. Some of them now have nicknames because they're well known in society, and some people appear to use them excessively. One of the things we haven't talked about is whether or not there's actually a physiological addiction possible. I think when people talk about crackberries in the common, you know, language and media, what they're saying is it's sort of a sociological behavior, maybe a psychological addiction. But you see this word addiction cropping up all the time now. And one of the things you and I have talked about in the past is that there is some evidence now, not proof, but evidence, that the endogenous opioid system of the brain is activated with radio frequency and extra low frequency exposures, both of which you get from these things. And if it's true that there is something in the brain biochemically that changes with these exposures, that promotes these activations of these addiction centers, then we're going to have a very interesting time, because that would mean that these devices should be regulated as drugs.
My own anecdotal observation from my consulting practice is that I am seeing increasingly young people who are very dependent on the use of devices, including cell phones, which they are on all the time. I mean, they literally, everywhere they go, they carry the cell phone when they're at work, they're answering the cell phone when they're walking outside, they're on the cell phone. If you go to one of the health food stores that has a food counter, people are sitting and talking on their cell phones. If you go into the city, everybody's walking around talking on cell phones, even when they're with other people. They're not talking to the other people. They're on cell phones. So there is this very compulsive behavior. And what I see in my practice is a lot of people who are in a state of anxiety and hyperarousal, and they are not sleeping well. And then I know that electrosensitive people, which make up theoretically 20% of the population, although I'm sure that the numbers are increasing if anyone would bother to count them the way Ole Johansson did, is that people feel when they're exposed to these fields as if they're being microwaved. They feel very hot. Their skin gets red. Their eyes get red. They get severe headaches. They're thirsty. And people don't know, not only don't know when they're being exposed, but they also don't know to associate any of these symptoms
right.
to anything. So people come in with children who are ill, for instance, and I'll say, hyperactivity, compulsive behavior, not sleeping, I say turn off your wireless to start it with. And do you live next door to somebody with a wireless? Well, it's coming through the wall. So,
right. So, turn on your laptop and see how many, you know, how many Wi-Fi hotspots light up. You know, how many networks can you join?
Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
It's a frightening thing. You know, Elena, in my hand right now, I'm holding a set of abstracts, probably, I don't know, 20 pages worth, that are, you know, about three abstracts to a page, each one of them from a scientific study. And the first set is associating mobile phone use with sleep loss and sleep disturbance. We think that there are very good links already documented to sleep disruption. REM sleep is different. The brain activity at night is different. And if this is true, you know, we've all been reading about, you know, how many people in this country are taking sleep aids, what the rate of insomnia is and how it's increasing. And, you know, if you name almost any threat to health, lack of sleep plays a role and worsens your symptoms. You know, this is a time we heal. So unplug the wireless in your house. Don't sleep in hotels that have Wi-Fi.
Good
and tell
luck.
Them why you're not going to do it.
Good luck
yeah.
finding them.
Yeah.
No, I mean, campgrounds have it now. I mean, I've been on this route because, as I said on the air once before, I actually went to a B&B that was a very health-oriented B&B, you know, with all unfragranced and cotton sheets that were organic and all this kind of great stuff. And I have never had this experience before. I could not sleep. I mean, I couldn't even doze. I could, and I tried taking all my usual herbs and homeopathics, and nothing worked.
Yeah, you lie and you stare at the
absolutely
you're
the
hyper-alert.
Whole,
yeah.
Uh-huh. And in the morning I went down and I said, because at some point during the night I thought, what? This has never happened like this. I mean, I've had nights getting, but I doze off a little if that happens. And I went down and I asked, did you by any chance put wire? Oh yeah, we just put it on. Yeah, isn't that great? We just started.
Well, there's a huge disconnect here, but I think if people who are otherwise pretty green, you know, and require mm-hmm. their personal environments to, you know, be healthy other ways, this is one more thing on that list, you know, clean air, clean water, and so on. Well, no wireless. And, you know, it's frightening to think that, you know, there's a prominent hotel featured in the Sunday LA Times this last weekend, and I won't name it because hopefully they'll learn rather than have to be embarrassed first, but they're opening a huge spa and, you know, wellness resort in Westlake Village. And I called up and I said, tell me about it, and do you have wireless? And they proudly told me there wasn't a square inch of that place that didn't have wireless. And I said, are you aware that a lot of people can't sleep in wireless, and that isn't conducive to wellness? And they had no clue. So I think that there's a large education here that has to occur, and the consumer is going to vote with dollars. And hopefully people who reject it will say, hey, you know, I'd love to stay with you.
Oh, no, there's no question that this is going to come down to consumerism since we're locked in, you know, the governments are locking us. I mean, the laws are locking us in, although San Francisco Doug Loringer has had some success and continues to communicate about it. When he has a real success, we'll put him on. But there's been some moratoriums on certain things and slowing down. But I agree with you, and I also would like to, as we discussed, encourage people not to be hysterical about this. I mean, there are some people who listen to my show regularly who are very appreciative of me doing these shows because they are electrosensitive, and it's terribly important not to be shrill.
Right.
I was in a restaurant recently that we like a lot, and I chose to sit outside because they now have a wireless router, and when the owner came by said, "How is everything?" I said, "You know, not everybody likes wireless. Some people don't feel well around wire." He said, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah, it, you know, some people get headaches and they just don't, and it's, there are people who are sensitive and not everybody likes it, and it's probably good for you to know that." He said, "Well, I've never heard that before." Mm-hmm. Never heard that before. So one thing you can do is just alert people and just really try not to be shrill, because if you're shrill, of course, they'll think you're mad.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, hundredth monkey. There has to be a critical mass of information, and it has to be, you know, it has to be reasoned. It has to be valid. And we're not, you're not saying, and I'm not saying that we have complete proof, but the evidence now is so rich and so deep and so ripe that people who care now and want to know what to do about it need to know what the sources are and what some of the solutions are. And particularly, you know, our young people, our working force, you know, our best and brightest are out there using these technologies, you know, indiscriminately, without knowledge, without informed consent. And although we haven't talked much about it, Lena, in this segment, I think miscarriage and fertility issues for men and women are really going to be big players.
Well, what do we know so far? What are the, because you review the studies, so what are we seeing so far?
Well, we are seeing, we already have studies that are very solid that report women who are exposed intermittently in early pregnancy to only 16 milligauss spikes, okay, only 16 intermittent in a pregnancy, have almost greater than a fourfold increased risk of miscarriage. So this ELF is already recognized in some studies as a miscarriage risk. So you know what I did? When I looked at this data and I thought, these women who are wearing a PDA are having huge exposures, let's look at one of these graphs to see how many 16 milligauss spikes occur in a day. And it's hundreds in a day, far more than the definition of intermittent. So I think we're looking at a miscarriage risk, although we need more science. But, you know, what does the woman today who's 29 years old and wanting to start a family do if she's required by her employer to carry and use a PDA? Well, get it the heck away from your body. And you might set some limits with your employer. You might ask for, you know, wired communications for the period of time that you want to become pregnant and are pregnant. And we've seen studies, and they're good studies, on male fertility. Reduction in sperm quality, reduction in sperm motility. Now, you don't want to be wearing one of those on your body all day, every day, if you're thinking about starting a family, if you're employing precautionary action, preventative action. And we're there today. We know enough today to do this.
Okay, so we're not just talking about PDAs, though. We're really talking about a number of technologies, and we're not saying, don't be current, don't live in the world, don't use these technologies. We're saying make informed decisions about the amount of exposure you choose. Because, for instance, I have discussed with some of my clients the idea of carrying the cell phone turned off and periodically checking your messages and then, you know, making some calls with a wireless headset. Like people are walking around with these wireless headsets on all the time now. They're like jewelry. They look like something out of Star Trek. They're Lieutenant Uhura or something. You know, we're not talking about that. We're talking about a headset that actually moves everything away from you, so that, you know, I think one of the first shows we did, you were talking about being on your way to an industry conference, and the people who worked in the industry were holding their cell phones very far away from their bodies when they were talking on them. Maybe it wasn't you. Maybe it was somebody else.
That was me.
Yeah.
Burbank Airport.
Yeah. So you know, the issue is getting acquainted with how much there is and where it is, and deciding how much you're going to, if you know, for instance, that you're living in a city that's blanketed by Wi-Fi, might you decide not to at least have extra in your house? Might you also decide then to have wire, you know, regular landlines in the house, just not to, because we're talking about adding layers upon layers upon layers. And it's not one of these things where if you buy a house and there's a power pole in front of you, you should automatically freak out.
Right.
You can call PG&E. They will come out with a Gauss meter. They'll check how powerful a power pole that is. And power poles are usually not the problem. The problem is the addition of all the extra things. There's also prudent ways to set up offices so you're not sitting behind another computer and things like that.
Right. You know what I think we're going to see, Lena, with the evolution of this with enough, you know, public awareness, I think we're going to see neighborhoods that get together and agree that if they're going to have wireless routers inside their homes and they're going to have, you know, Wi-Fi in the home, and, of course, that slops over onto your neighbor.
Oh, it's 300 right? feet.
But neighborhood associations, I think, in the future will agree that they have a lights-out policy at night, and everybody unplugs at night.
Then you have to make decisions about where you're going to live,
sleep.
Too.
Right.
This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman with Cindy Sage of Sage Associates. SageAssociates.net is the website. We're discussing EMF, which is the big topic, and under that there's all these other subtopics like cell phones and wireless and, you know. There's just where is the government in this now?
Well,
how can they be sold if there's research that shows right. that they're probably not okay?
Well, you know, it's a problem. You know, the government sells the airwaves and is chartered to promote, you know, sale and productivity, you know, related to the airwaves. And at the same time, they accept limits that are recommended by the industry and professional societies full of industry members. So the technology is really run ahead of any biologically based standard setting for health. That's the central problem. And it is so controversial a topic in this country and around the world. Almost every government is in flux on deciding whether or not to tighten up the regulations. Unfortunately, in this country, the industry groups that recommend these standards to our government, to the FCC, have recently recommended relaxing the standards that we have that are completely inadequate. And the reason, in part, is that our devices can't meet the standards today, lax as they are, so they're being relaxed. This is entirely driven by the need of the industry and not biologically based damage.
Well, you also mentioned in your notes that many devices are exempt from any rules for emissions.
Right. Yeah. There's a whole class of devices like this and Bluetooth devices and so on that are basically exempt from, because they're thought to be so low in strength they shouldn't matter. But of course they do.
Well, why don't you tell us what the names of some of those are so people can be focusing on that better?
Well, in general, Wi-Fi devices, Bluetooth devices, communication devices of different kinds. Cell phones are regulated, by the way, and PDAs are regulated, but these would be the very low strength, again, low is relative, things like Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, and any device that is using those, you know, for that purpose. The 802.11b is the number and letter of the exemption, and there will be more exemptions coming as there are more devices. But again, as a class, all of these technologies are bioactive. We have not yet found a lower limit at which the human body cannot detect and amplify these signals. And that's all it takes for stress reactions to occur, physiological heat shock protein reactions and so on. And, you know, now that we look very, you know, deeply, and we're looking very deeply into the literature, what we're finding is that there are a number of very respected researchers, like the late Ross Ady, who have said there may be a zero threshold, meaning there is no lower limit. If the body can detect the information, it will amplify it and react to it, usually badly. So that really is going to put us at a, you know, at a juncture where we have major public health policy decisions to be made. Maybe we went down a wrong road with wireless, and we're going to have to back up and find something else to replace it that's less potentially risky.
Hi, Cindy. This is Jeff Fawcett.
Hi, Jeff.
You know, something's been going through my mind here about the effect of ELF exposures from BlackBerries. And I'm wondering if kids, teenagers in particular, use texting a whole lot on their cell phones, and if that creates a similar exposure.
Well, we haven't done the test, but by analogy, Jeff, the answer should be yes. May not be quite as high a spike, but every time that battery has to work for a data transmission, it's going to spike and produce a big ELF emission.
And that's
my guess is yes.
And that is a significant exposure for kids that, in the teen years, because they use texting a lot, see as much or even more than the actual phone capacity of the thing.
And
that's a serious public health
issue. We thought it was a good thing, Jeff, because at least they're not holding a cell phone to their head.
Right.
But on think of it this way: when they're wearing the cell phone and it's receiving an email, they're getting the huge ELF spike on their body. When they're sending an email, they're probably holding it away from them, which is going to create, again, the same equivalent ELF spike, but, out in their hand or arm, but away from the body. So there may be some distinction to be drawn there.
Yeah. There are some other technologies that are on the horizon. One of them is WiMAX, and another that I've seen is, I actually don't know how to pronounce it, but it's WII, which I assume is the same kind of, well, WiMAX is just an attempt to put together all of the services, current wireless services, like wireless routers, internet access with cellular, with voice and data. A complete network, which Lucky New Orleans gets to be, I guess they're pushing to make that the first completely wireless city. Great. But also there are these gaming devices that I see pop up, which I guess is it's a motion device which works on the same principle, so that it's now really embedded in, again, I'm thinking of exposures to children, that this is a big gaming device.
Well, for kids, I think, number one, no cell phones or PDAs. Number two, keep wireless out of the classroom. And by gosh, if schools think they're going to go this way to save some money, they're going to have to put aside classrooms for parents whose children are not allowed to have those exposures. They'll have to be an equal opportunity for learning in a wired environment, because these are very serious problems that we're going to pay for down the road.
I want to, at the risk of being boring because it's reading, I would like to read a letter that Blake Levitt sent out. I won't disclose the parent's name, but it is a father talking about his son. But it is such a compelling example of this, and I think this might be motivating to people who are sitting on the fence. Ms. Levitt, Blake Levitt is the author of Electromagnetic Fields. We've had her on the show many times. She's a longtime researcher in this field and writer. My son has been having very serious ailments over the past 6 months, including severe and constant headaches, leg pains, poor sleep, and even heart palpitations. Various specialists were at a loss as to why he had these conditions. The only thing that showed up in extensive blood work was a low IgA level. This is your...
immunoglobulin.
I did some research and figured out that it may be the Wi-Fi wireless internet I installed in our home exactly 6 months prior. So I quietly unhooked the system, monitored my son so as not to tell him of the changes. Sure enough, within hours, his headache that he had had without pause for 6 months went away. We're about 2 weeks from when I disabled the Wi-Fi system, and my son's entire medical symptom list has completely cleared up. No longer does he complain of sore legs or headaches, which is a big relief to us. Most importantly, his blood panel showed that his IgA levels returned to normal. Upon investigation, I found that EMF and EMR from wireless networks can lower melatonin, which indirectly lowers IgA, There are studies that confirm this. IgA itself is responsible for fighting a variety of illness. So we can say indirectly that EMF, EMR may be responsible for an extremely wide range of human ailments. I have found some schools and some countries are already removing Wi-Fi systems because of extremely high levels of complaints from teachers and students about ill effects after their installation. I believe this issue is vastly more dangerous than cellular towers because the highly concentrated, continuous signal nature of wireless internet. I believe there needs to be some detailed and up-to-date works to reflect the rapid increase of high-powered wireless internet networks being installed in schools, homes, and cities nationwide. And, you know, Blake wrote back that she's on it and she's getting in touch with people. But it's the consumer has to be vocal, has to be, you have to make your wishes known. And if I understand this country well enough, in the United States, people desire to have a choice about what they're exposed to. You know, they don't want the government in their stuff. They want independence and blah, blah, blah. But if you want that, you have to take responsibility. And this is an economic issue. So if you make your voice...
There have to be some clean environments left without this.
Well, have to? I don't know.
I hope so. With secondhand smoke, it took quite a while.
It took a long time, but it was the consumers. When we had Stan Glantz on, he said it was the consumers, not the government.
You know, I'm so hopeful that, you know, if Stan were listening, I would say, Stan, you've handled yourself so well with the whole issue of
Stan
smoking
Glantz.
And lung cancer and secondhand smoke. We'd like for you to look next at secondhand radiation because you're looking down the same road.
Yeah, no, he acknowledged that might be so. He's not working on that.
Right.
He's busy with the smoking. He's trying to get it out of films and stuff. But he agreed that it was that there could be. Well, I shouldn't speak for him. Maybe I'm not sure about that. But I remember him being receptive to that idea. But he did say that yes, it was consumers being vocal and consumers taking action that turned things around.
Well, let's hope today, you know, consumers got another piece of the story, and those people who are using these devices will now be able to make better judgments about whether or not, it's something that they think is tolerable or not.
Yeah, and it's also important for people to understand that people have forgotten that you can buy a wired router and a wired modem. And, you know, we have a wire running up a deer fence for the equivalent of about a quarter of a city block, you know, because we're out in the country. And it works just fine. You know, it's not a problem. Very easy to do. Your wire's not expensive. It works great. So people shouldn't. There are options, and they work fine. You don't have to be someone who doesn't use technology. You can use everything. You just be prudent about how you use it.
Right.
So we're going to have to wrap it up. I am so grateful to you for staying on all of this and keeping us informed about all the newest stuff. Cindy Sage, sageassociates.net.
Elena, we hope in about 6 months to have a very large study of all of the science on these issues to bring back to you with some recommendations to this country and to the World Health Organization about biologically based public exposure standards.
That's going to be very exciting. We're really excited about that. So thank you in advance. But we'll look forward to that. We'll certainly let people know that it's going to be on.
Good.
So again, thank you so much, Cindy Sage.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. If you need more information or if you want a CD copy of this or any other in the series Your Own Health and Fitness, you can call my information number 24 hours a day at 707-874-2772. For a list of other available shows, information about guests, the Progressive Health Observer and Radio on Demand, where you can download archives and articles, go to the website yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is also available online all week long at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is a joint production of Your Own Health and Fitness and KPFA. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.